Whoa, welcome back, folks. Episode 38, Get a Grip on Lighting. On today's show, we have Paul Pompeo. Who's Paul Pompeo? Well, if you don't know, now you know. He is the CEO of Pompeo Group, and he is an executive recruiter. We talked about a lot of things. We talked about the recruiting process, how to hire, how to interview, when you should fire, when not, and a bunch of other things as well. So thank you, Paul, for coming on the show. We really enjoyed it. You're a true gentleman. And thank you for telling us a little bit about your company and you know how specific it is in the lighting business. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Kurtzon Lighting. Go to KURTZON.com, baby. Kurtzon.com. Specification grade, Greg.
That's what they're about, man. And one of the things that we need to really point out is that they have over 900 DLC listed products.
Come on, man.
So that tells you yeah, they're in the game. They're looking for getting you the right product, getting it rated where you need it to be. And then in addition to that, they have a lot of real nice looking product. And the one we want to point out today is their linear wraps. So you can see it up on screen probably here, but they have a narrow profile all the way down to a wider profile. There's four different options there that they show. But I can't tell you how nice those wraps look compared to fluorescent wrap. You know, a standard fluorescent wrap with that acrylic lens and the dimpled look and all of that, and you put one of those in, it blows it away. And it's something that you should always look at because of the look of it, the feel of it, and the light that you actually get from it, which is most important, is much better out of that than you would out of a fluorescent wrap fixture.
And you got that real warranty, the 5/10 warranty from Kurtzon, a company that's been around over, 100 years, almost as old as Canada. So go to Kurtzon.com. That's KURTZON.com, baby, Kurtzon.com. And this episode and every episode of the podcast that you get on the GetAGripOnLighting.com website is sponsored by the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. Go to NAILD.org, baby. That's nailed.org. But for right now, start get your hiring and firing hat on. We got Paul Pompeo, episode 38 of the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. Welcome to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast, Paul Pompeo.
Appreciate the invitation. Very glad to be here.
Say hi to Greg Eric.
Hey, Greg, how are you?
Good, Paul. Thanks for coming on.
Oh, my pleasure.
Tell us a little bit about Pompeo Group, Paul.
All right, be pleased to. The Pompeo Group is a search firm specializing in lighting, electrical, controls. We work usually on searches in kind of middle and upper management positions, both nationally and now internationally, global searches as well, placing professionals. That's the one common theme is the industry we're in. We don't work in other industries at all. We're exclusively focused on our industry. We've recently added two new segments to our business. We've formed a joint venture with an M&A firm where we now work with companies when companies are either looking to grow in ways other than organically through acquisitions, or companies that are looking where maybe perhaps the owner is looking to take some cash off the table or wants a plan and exit strategy. And while most of our work up to this point for the last, it'll be 15 years next year, we celebrate our 15th year anniversary. We've also added now consulting division, which means that while all of our searches have been up to this point for permanent positions, full-time positions, we're also now working with companies when they're looking for someone for a part-time project, might be for a few days a week or maybe 3 weeks or for a few months.
What's a typical Pompeo Group customer look like from the lighting side?
Great question. And let me know if this answers it. It's most of our work is with manufacturers. We do work with distributors, design firms, some ESCOs, but I'd say over the last 15 years, our work has been probably 90%, 80 to 90% on the manufacturing side. And that could be for a manufacturer of any of the product types that we just discussed. So obviously a lot of fixtures, a lot of controls, but also electrical products and some of the other, and controls certainly we're involved with a lot, just like I think many people in lighting are.
What actually got you into lighting, and why are you focused on the lighting industry?
I wish I could say that I had this vision for the future, but that would not be true. It really was something when I first started, I was with a company called Search West, a very large search firm based out of Los Angeles that had several offices. And it was back in the time when they'd hire many recruiters and kind of, they trained us really well, but they'd kind of see who would stick. It was a tough industry. It was kind of almost like compare it to stockbrokers at first. And so they gave me a segment called industrial sales, which I didn't know much about or have much interest in at the time. But so I was working at first recruiting for anything from plumbing, pumps and compressors, electronic warfare, believe it or not, was part of it, which was interesting. Microwave systems, electrical and lighting fit into that. And so as I started off as a recruiter, and again, it was kind of a tough start for me, as it was for many of us, because it is a challenging business, especially at first when you're new, is I accidentally really kind of landed on a lighting company, made a placement, and I'd done so much recruiting that I had a lot of profiles of candidates I'd never been able to reach yet. So I did a lot of recruiting, maybe over-recruited. So at that point, after not having placed someone working in some different industries, and I landed with someone in lighting, I said, look, can I just stay in lighting? So I've grown to love the industry, but if I said that I had planned to get in lighting for a certain reason, I'd be disingenuous.
I don't think any of us plan to get in lighting. We all just happen to be.
It's a
You know, if
weird
I can add
industry.
something there,
Yeah, sure.
it is. It's really an interesting industry. I'll tell you, most recruiters, if you ask recruiters, no one, what is the old meme, or kind of paraphrasing the meme, gee, mommy, I want to grow up to be a recruiter, said no child ever. It's
Yeah,
kind of
sure.
like that, right? Most of us recruiters got into the business by accident, but recruiting has been just a wonderful industry for me to have gotten into, and I'm really thankful to the folks at Search West where I got my start. But lighting was something by accident, and like you said, for many of us, but it's now lighting is equally a passion for me. And I was flying back from our New Mexico office last week, and I caught myself taking photos on the Southwest Airlines of what I think are kind of their cool new lighting systems that are kind of color changing. So I was busy taking photos of that. So I'm a lighting geek as much as the next person.
And that's in the business class of Southwest, right?
I was about three seats in front of the toilet row in the back, if you want the full disclosure there. And I have to share with you one thing, if I could, just briefly, is one of my first searches with a lighting company. I had picked up the president and his wife from the airport, and we were going through LAX. And as we're going down the escalator, the president's pointing to a lighting fixture in the airport and saying, gee, honey, what is that? You know, what do you think that is? Is that Hubble or Cooper at the time or whoever? And I remember thinking to myself, and he's a great guy. He's still a friend and a client of ours to this day. He's with a different company now, but I thought, gee, that's awfully, I would never be. What a mundane thing to do, to be pointing up at a lighting fixture and wondering what that is. And of course, before I knew it, I was doing the same thing, right? So I'm busy pointing at things wherever I go, hey, you know, trying to look and see what it is. So it's funny how we all get into lighting from different locations prior to the industry.
Yeah, I might get smacked in the head if I started pointing out lights to my wife.
I don't necessarily do it with my wife, but I've definitely done it with other people, and I find myself definitely looking on my own, trying to see if I know, see who made it, or and I learn every time I kind of many times when I look and try to investigate that.
Sure. When one of my buddies was a flooring guy and I was a lighting guy, so we'd walk into a room and I would look up and he would look down. It
Oh,
was
interesting. Okay.
yeah. So he'd be looking at the floor and I'd be looking at the lights. Yeah, back in a little while ago. So you started this thing in 2003, it looks like. 15 subtract 18,
Yes.
right? So you've been riding the lighting retrofit wave with the rest of us for the last decade and a half, haven't you?
Yes, that's not all of our businesses in that segment, obviously, but we've definitely worked in that area with retrofits and things like that.
No, but I mean the growth. There's been a shake up in the business in the last, 15 years where it changed from, I think, and I don't know if this affected your business at all, but manufacturers having to adopt new products and bring out new things faster, and it's just been accelerating, accelerating, accelerating. How has that affected the recruitment process and your business?
It's been interesting. You know, I kind of call it an evolutionary or revolutionary time we're in. And it's an exciting time that's, I think, exciting as well as I think it could be scary to some people. But I for some reason, don't look at it as scary, though who knows where we'll be in 5 or 10 years, right, with lighting. But it's exciting. I think the benefit to us is companies are still looking for people. And I guess what I would say is, although the industry is changing and some of the business models are imploding or changing as we look at them, at the same time, companies are still looking for people. And if you look at it from the candidate side, candidates are now, I think, more emboldened, or employees, to make changes than they were 10 years ago, because business overall is strong. At least they see opportunities out there. So we've been very fortunate that business has been good. But we're also very aware that different segments are facing challenges. Different parts of the U.S., and I'm sure that might be true of Canada as well, are facing, you know, challenges in certain locations.
So you had out of the services you offer, I assume recruiting is the one that you do the most of versus mergers
Oh,
and
absolutely.
acquisitions and things. Yeah.
No, absolutely. Great question. But the vast majority of what we do is recruiting. And I think that will always, hopefully, be the majority of what we do.
Is there what's been the highest growth in terms of percentage out of the different services you've offered in the last couple of years? Has it continued to be
Well, I
that?
think really, oh no, it continues to be recruiting. The M&A side that where we're partnering with firms is relatively new for us. It's really only a year. So we're having nice traction in our first year, but it's
Is that
still just
because
one
there's
year.
so many mergers and acquisitions and consolidation going on in the lighting business right now? Like, were you
Could
able
you
to
rephrase the
take,
question?
yeah, so were you able to take your recruiting clients who are manufacturers? Because right now, a lot of people have been pointing to and in hinting at serious consolidation in the lighting business over the next 5 to 10 years. Was the mergers and acquisitions side that you're now opening up, is that too? Go after your existing lighting clients because there's you're seeing that there's going to be a lot of consolidation in this industry in the next 10 years.
That's a terrific question. I don't know if we really came from it exactly from that end. It was really more coming from the end of what we really do is matchmaking. Is the more I do recruiting, we think of it as employment placement and search, which it is, but it's ultimately matchmaking. Matchmaking, if you think about it, it's matching two people together. Because even though a company may be looking for someone, ultimately it's going to be one person looking to hire another human being, right? So part of it is chemistry is really important, especially in sales and marketing roles. Perhaps a little more important than in engineering. So it's really matchmaking. At one point, I was thinking, and as we saw mergers and acquisitions just continue over the last, what, 10 years, and even I think increase in the M&A, there was an increase in M&A activity overall, not just in lighting. I said, well, look, if we're matching up people with companies and people with people, why don't we really use the same skills to match up companies and companies? And that's kind of where it came from.
Has it worked out well?
So far, again, we're still new in it, like any kind of new business venture, but so far we have several engagements going right now. We have some clients where we already have offers. One company, a very respected company, obviously I can't get into details,
Sure, of
it
course.
has I think three offers. Yes, appreciate that, but it has three offers on the table. So it's really exciting for me, and I'm honestly learning. I work with an M&A partner who understands the due diligence, all the other things related to different aspects. What I advise on is just the lighting industry and perhaps targets we might want to reach out to.
Yeah, what type of companies are being acquired or in that merger acquisition? Is it again manufacturing side, or are you working with distributors as well?
That's a great question. Up to this point, again, we're speaking kind of while it's somewhat of a new business area for us, but the bulk of it is manufacturers, but also there's a lot of interest both on the acquisition side as well as being acquired on the distribution side. So I'd say that's not too far behind the manufacturing side. We've seen a little bit of a design on the design side, but with design firms, they have to be really of a certain volume to have it make sense if they want to be acquired. We've not been approached yet by any design firms that want to acquire other companies, but I think at one point we'll be working, I would imagine, with some of the very large A&E firms that might be looking to buy up, let's say, a local practice or acquire a local business.
So what is the true value of buying a manufacturer? A lot of it, as we know, is manufactured overseas by subcontracted manufacturers that really any lighting manufacturer could probably get into and kind of figure out in a roundabout way. But what are they buying when they're buying a manufacturer that's been established?
It could be a variety of things, and I think in our way, our M&A partner might speak, might be able to speak more in detail on that. But from my
Sure.
standpoint, I would say it's sometimes they're buying market share. Sometimes some companies will buy another company just to take someone off the market, a competitor out of the market. That's not the main reason for acquisitions. But if you think about it, most companies are not rushing to buy a Me Too company, at least from my experience so far. They're rushing to buy a company that has a unique product that maybe fits in with the acquirer's strategic plans of an area where they want to be able to add that product offering to their mix. That's what I see, I'd say, more than anything else.
When,
I would
excuse me.
add one thing. Okay, go
Sure, go
ahead. I'm
ahead.
sorry.
No, you go ahead. No,
I was
you
just
had it.
going to add, especially I think because it's pertinent related to your podcast, is that it surprised me at first how much interest there was on the distribution side. So that was really neat for me to see as far as companies looking, distributors looking to acquire other wholesalers or other companies wanting to consider, an acquisition as well. Again, it's not anywhere near yet the volume of the lighting manufacturer side. We've definitely seen a lot of activity. And I also, it surprised me at first because a lot of it comes from overseas, which I was not thinking about at first, but we have contacts throughout the world in lighting. And a lot of people who have been interested in acquiring companies or being acquired have come from Europe or in, Asia. So that part was a kind of an interesting surprise to me.
Let me ask you a little bit about the recruiting side. Do you have a difficult time when you're taking someone that has a job, an existing position, and moving them to another company? How do you handle that from a perspective of, you know, like for me, when I'm hiring somebody on my end, I'm always a little bit wary to take someone out of a job that they have, that they're doing well at, and then moving them to a new position where they may or may not succeed. How do you coach your recruiters to deal with that? There has to be an emotional process. There has to be something to that that is, you know, that you really have to have a skill at. How do you guys handle that?
Okay. What I would say there is that, first of all, I have to respectfully disagree with your premise, okay? Right. I always say that we can never take a person.
Okay.
If that were true, it'd be like I'm the Pied Piper, right, where I just call up and say, hi, this is Paul Pompeo, and say, okay, where should I go? I wish my work were that easy, right? I probably would be in Hawaii right now full time, but it doesn't work that way. What happens is I say you can never take a person. First of all, it's not like you can take a rock or take this piece of paper. A person's only going to want to leave the company that they're at for something that they feel is better. So in that sense, you know, obviously if someone's recently started with a company, we try to stay away from candidates like that. And A, it's not good for their career if we had a candidate recently that had approached us, had been with this company since January. That was something very uncomfortable with us for a couple of reasons. One is for his career, it's not going to be good to be making a change after, what, 6-7 months. But beyond that, if he's doing that, what would be the reason that he's not going to do that to his new company in 6 or 7 months? So we don't look for job jumpers. But we really feel we're not taking someone. And occasionally you'll have that person, and often you'll have someone. When we have had that question from an employer, though, about taking employees, it's candidly, without naming names, it's been certain companies where they have turnover problems. And our reply to that is, respectfully, if you take care of your people, they're usually not going to want to leave. And the best companies have very loyal companies because they respect their employees and treat them carefully, pay them appropriately in a competitive market, and you won't lose your candidates. The other thing I would say is, when someone's looking to hire someone, I'd say, if you're not sure about the person, because you talked about, gee, what if they're currently employed? Mm-hmm. And I agree with you. I would say to any employer or client, if you're not sure about this candidate because they're currently employed, let's keep looking. Mm-hmm. Let's get someone where you're very excited, feel this is the right person. Because you don't want to pull someone out at a company, and by that I mean recruit them, or the company recruit them, if you're not sincere about really devoting the time for training, support, and allowing them to learn.
Yeah, you know, it's funny that you say that, because it's kind of a dichotomy, and I'm just speaking personally here. I don't know if Craig feels the same way. The first thing is that when you're working with a recruiter, and I have, there's, instead of them, you know, people applying for a job or coming for a job and then presenting to you, it's kind of inverted. You kind of have to sell the person on your company, which I don't even like. It seems to invert the process of hiring. How would you coach someone to get over that? I mean, for me, it's like, I'm going to pay you X amount of dollars a year. And, you know, it seems like, what else is in it for me to make this move? I think that person has to be a very high value person. I guess that's why you're working middle management and up, because, you know, it's difficult for me to sit back and say, okay, yeah, switch from here to here, make your commute a little longer maybe, or whatever you have to do. I find the recruiting process, I'm just saying that the recruiting process makes me a little bit uncomfortable, Paul, because it kind of inverts the process of hiring in a way, in that instead of the person selling themselves to the company, now you're selling the company to the person. Do I have that right?
I would say yes. I think it, and what I would bring up here is, it's important to discuss the market we're in. And I often say that we're in a candidate's market right now. It's funny, and I've been actually saying that now for about 10 years. Now, of course, we had the great the Great Recession of 2008, 2010. But other than that, it's really been a candidate's market. And I would say now that it's even more of a candidate's market than it was 5 years ago. So what that means is that there's a real war for talent out there. And I can speak for lighting, but I think it's true for many other industries. So you're in a different market, right? It's all in market. It's supply and demand, right? If we're in a period where there's been a recession or there are a lot of people out of work, then it's a little different. But right now, candidates are kind of sitting in the catbird seat to some degree, which means that the better the candidate, we find that the more opportunities they have at their current company, as well as other companies calling them. So as the employer, what we advise the employer is, and I understand exactly where you're coming from, because sometimes an old employer will say, gee, why should I have to sell them, Paul, you know, I'm interviewing, you know, if they want to come work for me, they will. And I say, well, that's a nice thought. And you can have that attitude. But what's happening is your competitors are going to be approaching it differently and wooing that candidate aboard and making them comfortable. Think of it in a way almost like with sports, right? Is if you have a hot free agent, is companies are going to bring them to their training facility, show them why you should come here and all those things. You really need to woo the best candidates. And obviously you have to be competitive dollar wise. We're not in a market right now, you know, to lowball candidates. That rarely works. And I find companies that do that have the candidates stay where they are or take another opportunity. So it is a real competitive market for employers. And that is a real challenge, but we advise our clients on the best strategies to deal with that market to be successful.
When you're thinking about this, are you serving, like, who is your customer? Is it the manufacturer or is it the candidate or is it both?
A, B, and C, all of the above. So I would say D, right? Is that our client technically and how we're paid is the company, right? But to your question, it's not necessarily a manufacturer, right? It could be a design firm. It could be a distributor as well. So our client is a company, but at the same time, we have been trained, and we train our people that our clients are also the candidates as well. Though they're not paying us as such when they go to the next career step, it's really that matchmaking and satisfying both candidates. While the company is certainly technically our client from a financial basis, putting a candidate in a situation that pleases the client, if it's not good for the candidate, is not good. It has to be good for both parties to be good for all of us.
So a candidate comes to you and says, hey, Paul, I want $100,000 a year salary plus this, plus that. Have you ever turned to them and said, look, looking at your resume here, looking at how long you've worked in the business, whatever, I don't think anyone's going to give you that amount. I think you're more positioned at this. Do you do like what they're worth to a lighting company analysis of the candidate?
To some degree, but I really would advise anyone, whether it's a client, company, or a candidate, to be realistic in their expectations. And that's an important thing. So if we think that a candidate is not being realistic in their expectations, or if a company is not being realistic in what they want to offer candidates, our job is to advise parties ahead of time to try to realize why it's not in their benefit to have something that might be out of line with what their position might normally pay.
So what is the process like? Is it a standard questionnaire or is it different depending on who the customer is or the client? How do you guys go about it? If somebody wants to use your services, what kind of steps do you take?
Well, we have a fairly extensive series of questions we go through with an employer when we first take on an assignment. In fact, most of our existing clients are used to it. And so luckily we've kind of developed profiles. We don't have to start from scratch with them. But for a new client, they're always surprised and say, gee, you know, you all are more detailed than any search firm I've ever worked with. Or there'll be a lot of times we get the question, boy, I never thought about that. And that's great, because if they're not thinking about those things, they should be thinking about those before they're really starting the interviewing process. So it's a very thorough interview that we do so that we can really do the search through the client's eyes and view that position. If there's another person involved with the interview process, we also will go over those notes with them. Because another thing that's really important, I've learned this the hard way in the past, is you can have two decision makers with the company that don't see the position the same way. And I have had more than one time earlier in my career where you get to the ending and it's an offer stage, and the client says, gee, I want to hire this person. And their colleague says, well, gee, but they don't have this. And the other person says, well, that's not critical to me. Well, it is to me. And then the search starts all over. So we've learned to really involve the key people that have hiring or will be the key people that interview and work with that candidate to be involved with the interview process. I don't know if that made sense. So I can reword it if you'd like.
Yeah, no, I get you. And this question, you know, I hope it's taken in the right format, but we had a recent podcast with Carol McLogan, and it was on inclusiveness in the interviewing process and the hiring process. Is there ever a time where a client might say to you that I think this is a gender specific role? I know that is probably not likely, but I'm curious on that topic.
Actually these days I don't have that too much, but anytime a client, it's funny, in Europe, you mentioned this, in Europe, It's very different rules than in the U.S. and I would imagine in Canada, right? So in Europe, we'll have a European client say, "Yes, Paul, I'd like a person who's, this and this, things that would be a violations of hiring laws in the U.S." And I have to explain to them that's not the way it works. Not only can we not do that, we look for only the best candidate, both legally and ethically. But you don't want to be asking any of those questions, Mr. or Ms. Employer, in the U.S., or you're going to potentially put yourself at great risk legally. So we don't have people usually specify anything like that. And if
No,
they
I
did,
didn't
I would
figure
just
that.
tell them, look, we can't. It's like asking someone what their religion is, during an interview. Just none of that is appropriate. It should be about the best person and the most talented person. If a client ever does that, there have been cases in the past, not many cases, where we've had to just, not work on the search or tell them, we might not be the best firm for you.
Is inclusiveness an
Gotcha.
issue? Is inclusiveness an issue in the lighting business?
Could you define inclusiveness to make sure I'm getting your
So,
question?
What Carol was saying, so she what she was saying was that you need a process that, like, basically, like you said, that is unbiased and searching for the best candidate for the job. But when you look around the lighting business, if you take a look at, I don't know about manufacturers, but distribution is certainly like this. If you go to a trade show or an event, you'll see that the large portion of the people that are there that are working in for-profit enterprises are men. And then the large portion of the women that are there that are working for not-for-profits, so sort of like the association management and stuff like that at different events. And so, do we have an issue as an industry in terms of, hiring women and minorities?
I think that lighting is always, and I love our industry, but it's always been, I think, behind the curve in some of those things. I think we're definitely getting better. There's no doubt. I mean, if you think of go to a light fair and just look at the crowd now versus looking at it 10 years ago or even 15 or 20 years ago, it was quite different. It's now, I think, getting much more diverse, as it should be. Does it reflect the same diversity that our population is, or that if you go to like the CES show, which is much more diverse, that type of show? No. So it's getting there. Could it get there more quickly? Yes. So I'm, because it is still this, whenever we come across female or diversity candidates, it's always exciting to me because I think our industry should really mirror the greater society at large, ideally. It's never going to be perfect, and you always want to go for the best candidate.
I'm not sure if I agree on that. I don't know. I've thought a lot about this since the Carol interview. I don't know. I mean, some people are attracted to different businesses for different reasons, and some cities are more diverse than others. Like in Toronto, it's almost impossible to have a non-inclusive atmosphere. There's just too many different people in Toronto. But I don't know. I have a tough time with that, and that's why we're trying to take in the opinions of everybody. I don't know what the right answer is. I'm a light bulb salesman at the end of the day, so. I'm just trying to think this through as from a podcast perspective, and then on Greg's question with Carol. So, all right, Gregor, you're up. We
Yeah,
got through that
so
one, Paul. We're okay. We got through it.
thanks, Paul. The other question I have, do you run into the issue of non-competes ever with clients or companies looking for certain candidates?
Yes, yes, more often than I'd like to. They've become more and more prevalent. I'm really not a fan of non-competes for the most part. I think they're not positive for the industry. I think it's coming from the wrong mindset. Personally, companies, the more restrictive they make them, it kind of is almost like indentured servitude. You can never work in this industry again. So you take someone that's very talented in our industry, so you have a non-compete for a year or 2 years. So now you're basically saying this very talented person can no longer contribute to our industry. Who is that really good for, right? So I think that what we've suggested to a lot of clients, and I think I'm hoping we'll see a trend in this, at least we're suggesting, and you can spread the word if you agree, is rather than a non-compete, is an NDA. I think that's much better.
See, I
Go
agree.
ahead.
I think a non-compete is so in Ontario, if you signed a non-compete with somebody, and
Okay.
either they quit, they got fired, or they were laid off, they could actually turn around and sue you and say, this is for sure common law in Ontario. They could turn around and sue you and say, well, I can't work till the end of this non-compete, so you should pay me because I'm only able to work in this industry because all my skills are in this industry. So in Ontario, it's actually the other way around. You don't want to sign a
Interesting.
non-compete. So like if you have a non-compete with with an employee that you're going to fire, the first thing you do is waive the non-compete before you fire them. And so it's kind of like a dull threat. It doesn't have any weight at all because someone could, if you prevent them, so it's kind of like if you're an electrician, you can't work as an electrician if you're fired from this job. Because, like, well, I'm an electrician. What am I supposed to do for 5 years or 2 years or 3 years or 1 year, whatever the term is? And so they actually can sue you if you don't release them from that. So it's actually turned on its head in Ontario in that way, in that respect.
Well, that's a very unique situation. I've not heard of that. In the U.S., it really varies by the state too, right? In some states, they hold up non-compete agreements. In some states, they don't, that they're not really held up and they're almost meaningless. But the trick is sometimes the reason it can be effective is it doesn't mean the company has to follow through on it. A non-compete is just the threat of that can be ominous. Because if you think about it, if a candidate leaves a company and goes to another company that technically violates a non-compete, as soon as the new company receives a letter from the old company, they're going to probably stop going after that candidate. So even if it wouldn't hold up in court, it's still been effective.
Yeah, it's agreed. Yeah, there's a point there, where it acts as a barrier, whether it's enforceable or not, is what you're saying.
Exactly, and that's so. It's the threat of it more than the actual pursuit of it that can be the power in it. And I would say one thing to the larger companies, the conglomerates, credit. I've seen this occasionally, though I don't think they'd admit it to you. But I've seen that with candidates, sometimes they've been more flexible on the non-compete. If a candidate has stood out and said, "Look, this is just too restrictive. If something were to happen, I'd not be able to really, you know, apply my trade in our industry again." And they've either the companies either to their credit have adjusted the non-compete for that particular candidate. Or in some cases, if a candidate has refused to sign it and they really want the candidate, they've allowed the candidate to join their company without signing a non-compete. So those will vary by employers, by employees, though I don't think many of those companies would admit doing that because they'd have all their employees wanting to renegotiate in that sense. And the companies most likely would not do that. But I have seen companies be a little more flexible based on a person's concerns about the non-compete. And again, we recommend an NDA that I think can accomplish a lot of the same things versus a non-compete, which I don't think is good for our industry.
I think, you know, for me as a business owner, I wouldn't, obviously I don't have non-competes because they don't make any sense in Ontario, but the other side of it's like, I think there's something immoral about if you leave one employer to take their customers. I think that's wrong. I don't think people should do that. I think when you go to a new company, you should develop your own new customer base or develop new customers.
And I agree. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead. No. You comment. Go ahead.
I was just going to add that I think that so non-competes are they. I sound like I'm down on them. I would say that the way I see them currently, sometimes they're just way too restrictive. I mean, I've seen somewhere just as a listing. Every type of lighting product you imagine with one candidate. And I said, according to this, you know, you can't do anything in this industry because it was like just a paragraph full of lighting terms. To me, that's not productive. But let's say to go to your direct competitor and things like that, I think it's fine to have a non-compete, I would say, that kind of prevents a candidate from selling the specific products into the market that you're in for a specific period of time that's reasonable and realistic. But I found that the better the candidate, the more they're reluctant to just from an ethical standpoint, go to work for a competitor immediately afterwards. If they feel that they'd be, in a sense, even unofficially violating a non-compete. It doesn't mean candidates don't go to competitors, but the best candidates are not going with thoughts of revenge. In fact, they're very sensitive to not putting their former employer in a negative situation.
So what if a candidate comes to you that is looking for a career change or a new position and has a non-compete? Is that something that you have to immediately shut it down, or do you have a process you go through, or how does that work?
Yes, a great question. I always say that I'm not an attorney. I just play one on TV, as the cliche goes. But, so we will advise people. We'll advise people on the non-compete and say, just from our perspective, but we want to be clear to say, look, we're not an attorney. Consult an attorney. But we can get a sense sometimes of how restrictive it'll be. And then if someone does have a non-compete and it's a good candidate, we want to try to see where we look to see where they might be a fit that would be in no way a violation. So the candidate can move on to their next career step without, causing a problem with their previous employer. Because that's not good for anybody on either side, the employer or the employee side.
Would you approach his existing employer and say something, or how would it, or anything like that would happen? Or is it totally between you and the candidate?
For us, it would be a violation of confidence. Our business is all about confidences.
Right.
So for us to approach a candidate's employer or someone currently employed would be something that we would never, ever do. But we have advised the candidate, if it seems like it's fairly restricted, advise them that they might want to talk to someone at their company if they feel comfortable. And we always stress that's going to be up to you. You have to make that judgment call because, on the relationship with the person you're asking these questions, but to talk to them about, gee, if I were to make a change, et cetera. And some candidates, depending on how motivated they are to make a change and what relationships they have with certain people in the company where they feel that they might be able to ask that question very confidentially, we'll go ahead and do that. Some candidates are reluctant to ask their company. And we don't do that all the time. That's just in selected certain circumstances where we think they might want to clarify. And that's usually if we feel it's just incredibly restrictive.
You know, it's funny because,
I know.
Greg, let's say one of your guys came up to you and said, "Hey, you know, I've always wanted to own my own business and all this sort of thing. And I know there's not a space for me to be an owner or premier, but I'm going to go start my own lighting company. But I'm not going to take any of your customers and I'm not going to solicit any of your employees to come work for me." Would you have a problem with that?
Not necessarily. I think it would be difficult to do, but
Yeah.
not necessarily. How
And when you think
about
about
you?
that's what it, yeah, I mean, I would be like, "Oh, shucks, you know, can we, is there something we can work?" If the guy was a star, I'd say, you know, something we can work out. But there's something to being open and honest with people. With some people, that works. Sometimes it backfires, though, Paul. But yeah, we really worked that non-compete thing over, didn't we, Greg?
Hey, we
Yeah, I
could do
had
a
to
whole
figure that
session
out.
on non-competes, actually. There's enough about that topic, but we certainly worked it over. I think for right now, it's.
Sure.
Yeah, definitely. So a couple other things. I noticed you're doing this lessons from leaders or what I've learned. I know that's not really your nature or your whole business, but it's something you're doing with the Edison Report. Can you just chime in on what that's all about?
Sure. It's something at one point, Randy Reed and I were sitting on a little quasi park bench at a light fair many years ago. It's like where they set up a little bench over a quasi bridge, believe it or not, at one of the shows. And we were just talking about things and kind of just talking about different ideas of things that we need to do for our industry. Because I think both, I don't want to speak for Randy, but I think both of us, I'll say for myself, have been very fortunate. The industry's been a great industry for us. It's something I really enjoy and enjoy being part of. And I think it shows in our work, honestly, that we really love lighting and love our industry. But we were talking about different things and we talked about the idea of something where we would talk to different people that have really reached certain levels of achievement in our industry and just kind of ask them what they've learned. I always liked that idea. And I saw it in a magazine at one point. There was a feature years ago, something like that called like What I've Learned, where it would take a celebrity or a famous public figure or a politician. And it was just a little one page questions of tell us what you've learned and just kind of random observations. I really liked the idea of it. It was always interesting for me to read. I guess that's where it started, reading those things in the past. And so we started with that, and just started asking people those questions. And again, I think it's a great way to learn from people that have been very successful. And we've had a great reaction to the series, but it's kind of something we do kind of as a labor of love more than anything else.
Sure.
Sometimes I have to take time away from a search or do it late at night. Like right now, I'm due to to do our next one, and finding the time to do it is a challenge on a monthly basis these days because it's so busy for us. But it's something I really enjoy doing, and I think it's a way to kind of, in a way, at least from my standpoint, to kind of give back to our industry and recognize all these people that have been leaders.
Can you recommend
That
anyone that
is
should come
interesting.
on? Can you recommend anyone that should come on the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast, Paul?
I'm sorry, you were saying that you would like to be featured next month, you were saying?
You know what?
Was that
I
the
would
question
still
worded a different way, or
no. You know what would be funny is that mine would be what I'm still trying to learn.
you and me both there, yes. You
But
and
you
me
know,
both there.
hey, we're always looking for good guests. So if you know anyone that can come on the show, definitely, send them our way if they want to do that. So it'd be fun.
You mean a Get a Grip series?
Yeah, no, I mean, don't just if you, hey, like Bill Brown was one of, I remember before I went to interview Bill Brown in Chicago, I read What Have I Learned by Bill Brown, your on Edison Report. So
Yes.
he was a great guest for us.
Well, I want to get right back into the hiring. We're going to bounce around a little here, but one of the questions I had, without getting into specifics, is if a company hires you and you do the search for them and find them whatever executive they need, are they then locked in to pay an X amount on a flat fee, or is it a yearly thing deducted from salary, or is that something that all depends on the client?
I think that's something that It depends on the client to a degree. Getting into fees and terms, I think, are something that we would normally not get into any more than talking about prices on your program,
Right.
I think, would be, if you don't mind, if I want to try to answer any questions, but I think that is something I'd rather, if you want to ask it a different way, I'm glad to try to answer that.
Yeah. Is it just something negotiated per client, or is it like, this is how the process is? You know, they work X amount for 3 months, and, or does it all depend on?
Is it a percentage of the salary? Is it a flat fee? How do you, that's what, I think that's what Greg's asking.
Yeah,
it varies by company. I would say, if I can turn this around for a second, for both of you, for your businesses, you probably have certain rates and prices, right? Mm-hmm. But in certain cases, depending on the customer, you may vary those depending on what the situation is, whether it's the price for something or the payment term. So we're like any other business in that sense. We have certain fees. Sometimes certain things can be changed, but it's just in certain occasions. But I think announcing that on the air, what we would do is something that you probably would be uncomfortable, you know, respectfully doing.
I get it. Yeah. I understand.
Specific. I'm not trying to not answer, but I think that'd be my best answer there.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then how about this question? Are talented people fired?
Boy, are talented people fired?
Yeah.
I think they, I'm not sure if I, let me try to answer it and tell me if I've answered it here. Are talented people fired? I think if someone doesn't play well with others, or has a huge ego, or does things that are unethical, absolutely. You know, I think we've seen some cases in the lighting industry, without naming names, where we've kind of seen what some people interpret as being part of the Me Too situation, where certain executives left companies at certain times for reasons that weren't having to do with talent at all, but were having to do with ethical issues, or, you know, or someone that can't work well with others.
Hmm.
Was that where you were coming from with that?
Yeah, just curious in general. I know we've talked before, Michael and I have, and just saying, you know, the people that are talented oftentimes are in a position already, so they're not always, you know, looking for jobs, but I think that's a little
then
naive,
I
think everybody's...
Question.
Yeah, no, I think you better understand it. Go ahead, Paul.
Yes, so I would say that, first of all, we've had situations where someone's very talented and they were as a candidate and they were being interviewed by a company and they were very talented, but they also knew that they were very talented and they exuded it, that they knew they were very talented. That's rarely a winning characteristic. And so some companies have been turned off and gone for a person that maybe quote unquote has less talent, but really could fit in with culture and was not full of themselves. The best people, though, still are often open to hear. So you don't want to think that just because a candidate's interviewing means that they're not as talented as someone who is not interviewing. Our job as a recruiting firm is to be able to find the best talent and talk to them about why they owe it to themselves to confidentially at least hear about an opportunity.
I feel like interviewing is really tough. I've always said, so if when I started, Paul, I was like as a human resources manager for my small little light bulb store up here in Canada. I always felt like I was a pretty good, and then I realized over time that I was like a 0 out of 10. And I think over the last 10 years, I've got to maybe a 4 or 5 out of 10. But I find interviewing very, very difficult. Can you give some tips to people that are doing interviews about, you know, what they should be? I feel like I'd rather than interview anybody, I feel like I'd rather go see their house when they're not there, when they don't know I'm coming. I know it's creepy to say that, but I'd rather see, like, do they make their bed in the morning? Do they clean their dishes at night? You know, I'd rather see that kind of thing than interview them. I find interviewing very difficult. Can you give some tips for people to what to look for while they're interviewing somebody?
I'm still trying to get over the mental image of you, like, looking in their kitchen window there, or they're being caught in their front yard, so I'm trying to get past that. I think that, by the way, I would say in a general tip is don't do that, because any candidate that sees that is probably going to have concerns about their employer.
Sure,
so,
of course.
But that, again, so I guess to your point there, we could spend a whole session on this as just tips as far as interviewing. I say stay away from stilted questions. I'm not a big fan of we had a client, and this is a very respected lighting fixture company that was looking for a national sales manager and working with the president. And he was working with a colleague, and the colleague was asking candidates questions like, boy, it was like a variation of, if you were on a deserted island, what animal would you be? And just questions like this, you know, I'm paraphrasing the question, but just these questions that are just like, totally, if you walked into a room and there was an elephant, what is the first thing you'd do? And some people will say that's great because you have to see how the person thinks on their feet. And I think that's, I guess, true to some degree, but I'm not a fan of questions like that. I'd say one of the things I'd say is ask open-ended questions. I think that's very helpful. Is, you know, yes or no questions are never going to help you. So ask a lot of open-ended questions where you can learn about the person. One of the things we do with clients is if when they get to the end, when they get to that in-person phase, is have them have the candidate fly up the day before, have dinner. Then you get to see a candidate in a different light. And both parties get to see each other. It's more of a social environment. It's more relaxed. Then when you get to the in-person meeting, you've already kind of broken the ice, which is the more formal one the next day. But you've also gotten to look at each other in a different, two different circumstances, which I think is very helpful. Open-ended questions, I'd say. Look for body language. Body language can say a lot. Those are some of the things I would suggest overall. And make sure that you're asking a lot of the same questions to each candidate. You can certainly tailor it based on a person's experience, but you want to be able to have some apple-to-apple comparisons on how they respond to some of the same questions.
How many times should you interview somebody before you hire them?
I think it really depends on the situation. If you just wanted to give me, if you wanted me to give you a general rule of thumb, I'd say between probably 3 to 4 times. It could be less, it could be more. Some companies have many more steps than that. And if when we say about how many interviews, you might go to a corporate office and then interview six people. You know, you might interview six of the employees of that office. So I count that as still one interview. So I'd say usually generally in the 2 to 4 range, I think is good. Anything beyond that, I don't know that you're going to know that much more after 7 interviews, though some companies think they will. I think you kind of can have create interview fatigue for the candidate. And in today's market, while you're having those 7 interviews, even if it's part of your process, great chance that you're often losing candidates to other companies that can react and respond more quickly.
How would you coach someone that relies on gut instinct to hire people? What would you say to them to pull back from that a little bit? Or is that good?
No, I think you have to use your gut a lot. I mean, it should not be the only thing. I think you should be open. But I think you have to use gut. If, you know, we've learned over the years that, you know, how many times have we all said, gee, I should have listened. I had that feeling. And I think that positively or negatively is still a good thing to go to. I wouldn't limit to that. The one thing I'd say in interviewing that I might add that this doesn't answer your exactly address your earlier question, but I would add to it is I think one of the key mistakes that I think companies make is they interview the resume. And we've seen that so many times, interview the resume instead of the person. And I've seen many times we have a great candidate who just was not, candidly, right or wrong, was not in the resumes. They were busy taking care of their job, right? Which I think is great. They weren't focused on the resume or polishing up their LinkedIn profile, right? They were busy taking care of the job, so their resume left a lot to be desired. I've seen the other situation where you have this beautiful resume, and I interview the candidate and go, gee, who put this together for them? Because, you know, they can't carry on an interview I think a very professional interview. So I'd say be really cautious about getting wowed by a resume or turned off by a resume. Look at the experience, but then talk to the person. And some of our best placements, I might add, I've had more than I could count many, many times where I've had a client company lecture me on why this person was brought into the interview. Why do we even see this person? Their background is so different. And guess who they hire? That person. That happens a lot of times because we've talked to the person, we've interviewed in them detail, we've seen things about their experience, maybe connections as far as hobbies that they share with the employer, reasons they made a change, maybe achievements that they might not have stated well in their resume, but things that can make someone very powerful. I did one of my very first searches was the lighting company, and I had I think six people from lighting. Another person was from a distributor of a he was working for a liquor company distributor. And they said the person could come from a manufacturer distributor. This is many, many years ago. And when the employer saw the resume, he said, why am I going to see this person? This person has no lighting experience, and the other ones did. And this is for a major company. And I said, just talk to him, because I had talked to this person. He was dynamic. He was sharp. He was ambitious. He had, you know, just had a tremendous work ethic. So the employer, you know, reluctantly spoke with him. He not only hired the person ended up being with that company for 18 years. And his last position with that company was a general manager of one of his divisions. So I always say, talk to the person, don't go by the resume.
You know, Carol McGlogan was just on this podcast in the last a couple episodes ago, or whenever we released this one, maybe 2 or 3 past. But she said she was in school a long time ago, and the professor put up asked a question of the class and said, "Who here is afraid to fire somebody when they get into a management position or a role?" And everybody raised their hand. And then the professor asked, "Who here is to hire? Who's afraid to hire somebody?" and no one in the class raised their hand. And it's actually the other way around. you need to be afraid to hire and quick to fire, right? So it's interesting how people, how much work and effort in that you need to put in to find the right people and get the right people. And it's very difficult to do, Paul. And I thank you for coming on the show and telling us a little bit about it.
Oh, my pleasure. If I might add one thing, I would agree with what she had said from what I heard, is that there's a book that, by the way, I'd recommend it to anyone who's hiring out there. It's called, and I'm going to mangle the exact title, but it's called Who? The Guide to Hiring A Players. And it's one of the few books I've read over the years in hiring that I was impressed with. And we actually use some of their tools, not only in our interview process for our company, for the Pompeo Group. We also recommend them to clients. But one of the things they say there, to your point, is hire slowly and fire quickly.
I guess that's a note to close. Thanks for coming on the show, Paul.
My pleasure. Thanks for the invitation. Great speaking with you guys.
Bye for now.
Thanks, Paul.
Kurtzon Lighting, kurtzon.com. Go to KURTZON.com, baby. Specification grade. Roll it, Greggy.
They have over 900 DLC listed products. And why is that important? Because you need DLC listing a lot of times
to get
rebates on projects. And they have it. They've covered it all. They make sure they're listing their products where they need to be. And in addition to that, and all their great fixture offerings, they have these linear wraps that you can see probably up on screen. They have a few different options. They have a real narrow profile and all the way to the wider profile. Nice diffused lens. So when you look at it, it's not glary and it has a nice upgraded look, professional grade. You can really tell just from the quality of it. And it's something that makes a lot of sense to look at in place of fluorescent wrap fixtures or anywhere you need a surface mount or even pendant mount fixture, you could put this.
So go to kurtzon.com. And remember, aren't they Jaga compliant too on a lot of their fixtures?
Yeah, they are. They go through all that.
Yeah, they're a super progressive American manufacturing company, man. So go to kurtzon.com. If you need that specification grade stuff, man, you got to go to Kurtzon. KURTZON.com, baby. That's kurtzon.com. And we'd like to thank the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. Go to naild.org, man. .org. I said .com a few times. It's .org, son. Nail.org, National Association, Innovative Lighting Distributors. We're here to help. Join us. And hey, Paul, thanks for coming on the show. We really enjoyed it talking to you and hanging out, talking about hiring and firing and picking up new people and all the stuff that goes involved with that. You know, Pompeo Group's a leader in, what are they? They actually specifically target the lighting business, don't they, Greg?
They do. Yeah, that's their focus, and that's what it's been from when he started it. Definitely a good option for you.
Yeah, Paul Pompeo and the Pompeo Group have rid the lighting wave with the rest of us. So we actually talked a little bit about the future of the industry as well. So thanks for Paul for coming on the show. This is episode 38. Get a grip on lighting.
Written on the rectory wall, there's a sign there for all. You are lost, Lord is there to find you.